ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय, ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय, ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। नारायणं नमस्कृत्य नरं चैव नरोत्तमं देवीं सरस्वतीं व्यासं ततो जय मुदीरये। नष्टप्रायेषु अभद्रेषु नित्यं भागवत सेवया भगवती उत्तम श्लोके भक्तिर्भवती नैष्टिकी। कृष्णाय वासुदेवाय देवकी नंदनाय च नंदगोपकुमाराय गोविंदाय नमो नमः। तप्त कांचन गौरांगी राधे वृंदावनेश्वरी वृषभानुसुते देवी प्रणमामि हरि प्रिये। हरे कृष्णा। सो वेलकम टू द सेकंड सेशन ऑफ दिस सीरीज कॉल्ड भगवद गीता डिकोडेड, वेयर वी आर ट्राइंग टू कंप्लीट वन चैप्टर इन वन सेशन। It's like a crash course. So today is chapter number 2. It is called Contents of the Gita Summarized. And essentially, this chapter has been named as such because Krishna has finished speaking the Gita in this chapter. But based on whatever Arjuna asked, because Gita was not meant for Arjuna, it was meant for us. So Krishna wanted to address a wide variety of audience, and therefore many other topics, or we can say all the topics that were discussed in the second chapter, they are discussed in detail in the rest of the Gita. So in the first chapter, Arjuna has given various reasons why he doesn't want to fight. He has been put under illusion by Krishna. And then he just gives up his bow and he sits down on the chariot, completely shocked to see what was standing in front of him. And he is in a state of compassion also, disillusion also, delusion also. And it is mentioned that the compassion that he was showing, it was for the body. And compassion can be at different levels, at the level of the body, the mind and the soul. The real compassion is at the level of soul. So many people try to show compassion to others. Some people try to show compassion to the body. Some people try to show compassion to the mind by speaking some pleasing words. But we are neither the body nor the mind. We are the soul. So the real compassion is at the level of the soul. Because the body is compared to a garment in the Bhagavad Gita. And simply by saving the garment of a person who is drowning, the person drowns, but we save his garments. That's not a real compassion. So we have to save the real person. And therefore Arjuna's compassion was not justified. Every reason that he was giving, it was based on dharma, but he did not have proper understanding, deep understanding of dharma. Because ultimately what is dharma? That which is given by the Lord is dharma. Dharmam tu sakshat bhagavat pranitam. That which the Lord gives is called dharma. Everything else is simply a dharma. So this is the chapter where Krishna speaks for the first time. It is explained, Sri Bhagavan uvacha kutastva kashmalam idam vishame samupasthitam anarejushtam asvargyam. And when Krishna starts speaking, it is mentioned as Sri Bhagavan Uvacha. So many times people are bewildered as to who is God. So if we go through the scriptures, there is no confusion. But when we gather our information from Google or WhatsApp, or we just sit and start chit-chatting and based on our own mind and intelligence, then that's when confusion takes place. Or when we don't learn from the right sources. Many people are writing books also, but are they the authorities? That also we need to question ourselves. So when you go through the scriptures, if you logically try to understand also, it is very clear that Krishna is God, and that's why the book has been named as Bhagavad Gita, the Song of God. So logically, when you try to analyze, you read any scripture, whenever Lord Shiva speaks, it is mentioned Shri Rudra Uvacha. Whenever Brahma speaks, Shri Brahmo Uvacha. But when Krishna or his expansions, any of his expansions speak, it is not mentioned Shri Krishna Uvacha, Shri Vishnu Uvacha. It is mentioned Shri Bhagavan Uvacha. Just to drive home this point, that Krishna is that Supreme Lord. And he tells Arjuna, why are you lamenting? You're lamenting for something which is not worthy of grief. And Arjuna continues to give arguments that, Krishna, why are you forcing me to kill? He's crying also, he's shivering, he doesn't know what he's saying. And that confusion continues till the seventh verse of this particular chapter, where he finally acknowledges, recognizes his own lack of ability, and he surrenders to Krishna. And he accepts Krishna as his guru. He tells Krishna that, I'm totally confused. I don't know what to do. Therefore, I surrender unto you. Accept me as your disciple and guide me. Tell me what needs to be done. So I am completely dependent on your mercy now. And this step marks the turning point in Arjuna's life. And through this, Arjuna is teaching us the first step in spiritual realization. Human life is meant for spiritual or self-realization. Like there are 8.4 million types of bodies or species. Each body is meant for the fulfillment of a particular purpose, for achieving a particular purpose. So what is the purpose for which the human body is given? It is explained, self-realization. The fish, the body is meant for a different purpose. The bird, the body is meant for a different purpose. Similarly, the human body, the USP we can say of the human body is that it is most suited, best suited for realizing the goal of life, to rectify all our past karma, past mistakes, to put an end to the cycle of birth and death, to realize who is God, who am I, where do I come from, where will I go, to find answers to questions like why do I suffer even if I don't want to. That is the purpose of human life. So everybody should be aiming at that purpose. But so there is a process. Suppose somebody wants to become a cricketer, there is a process to be followed. Somebody wants to become a doctor, there is a process to be followed. Similarly, for self-realization, there is a process to be followed. And in this chapter, Krishna takes us from the first step to the highest step in spiritual realization. And the first step is acceptance of a spiritual master, acceptance of a guru. Anybody who is born as a human being, he has to have a guru. And not just a dhongi guru, but a bona fide guru. So for that we need to know who is a bona fide guru. We read Padma Purana, we read many scriptures, and somehow or the other we can come across a bona fide representative of God, a bona fide guru, then that marks the turning point in our life as well. Because that means the beginning or the end of our material existence, our material miseries is near. And Arjuna teaches that first step, that foundational step, that basic step, that we like Arjuna only. Now Arjuna, as long as he was giving arguments based on his intelligence, he was bewildered, completely under illusion. He couldn't find a solution. So we are also like him, that we may be very wealthy, powerful, knowledgeable like Arjuna, but there are situations in life where we are not able to decide which way to go. We are at crossroads. And that's when Guru comes and he gives directions. The first qualification of a Guru is that he must be a devotee of God. God is Krishna. He must be a devotee of God. The duty of Guru is to connect the person to God. And if he's not doing that, then he's not a Guru. Then he's a cheater. And if he doesn't even know who is God, how will he connect us? If he himself doesn't have that connection, how will he give us that connection. He should be living by the scriptural injunctions, he should know the conclusions of the scriptures and should be able to teach it to others as well. He should teach by example. So he should be completely surrendered, he should have complete control over his senses. But the first and basic requirement of being a guru, he must be a devotee of God. That's it. So Krishna, through Arjuna, is teaching us the first step in spiritual realization. We have to accept a guru. It's not a matter of choice, and it is something which is it's a special benediction if we come across a bona fide guru. And everybody must search for a bona fide guru, and depending on the kind of sincerity we have, depending on the kind of desire we have, a particular type of guru will enter our life. If our desire is, okay, I just want a label of spirituality, but I'm not very serious about it. Following, I just want to have something to say. I also attend some classes. Then that's the kind of person who will enter your life, whom you will accept as your guru. And even after 20 years, he will keep you on the same level of body and mind, and not even 1% advancement we would have made. Your desire is 50%, then that kind of person will enter. And if we are very, very sincere to understand the purpose of life, to approach God, then that's the kind of person Krishna will send into our life, because he's situated as a Paramatma in our heart, and he simply reciprocates with our desires. He's simply reciprocating. So our desire has to be very, very sincere. Many times people ask, how do you find a bona fide guru? It all boils down to your desire. Have a sincere desire, and then according to our desire, a particular person will be sent into our life. This is a system within the universe, that even if we are in the darkest region of the universe, but there also, if we develop a desire that, okay, I want to understand God, I want to come close to Him, and then Krishna will send a person right there itself. So this is the system. He is situated as Paramatma. He will send the person, or we will be guided to the person. So everything in this universe is running based on desire. But please understand that as long as we are bereft of the shelter of a bona fide guru, we are not living an honorable life. We are not even considered worthy of respect. Especially the celestial beings look down upon us. Once Narad Muni, he went to attend a gathering of saints and the other devatas in the heavens. So he saw everybody was seated above on an elevated platform, but he himself was given a seat on the floor. So he was kind of bewildered. Then after this, he asked some of them that why was he given a seat on a lower platform. They said, because you don't have a guru. That's why. Then he immediately went, accepted Lord Shiva as his guru. And that's when next time he went, he was given an elevated seat. So it is the absolute necessity. First of all, to realize the goal of life. And secondly, when we are at crossroads, guru will come and he will act as the proper guide. He is the real guide, because he guides us based on the word of God. He does not guide us based on his own mind and intelligence. Anybody who is not guiding us based on Shastra, based on scripture, is cheating us, because we are imperfect, our senses are imperfect. Our intelligence is based on whatever guna and karma we have performed in the past. So we have limited intelligence based on whatever we have done. So if I start speaking based on what I think and I feel is right and start sharing it with the other people, then I am imperfect. So how can I give them perfect knowledge? However, the knowledge given by God, which is in the scriptures, is perfect. So a guru's job is simply to repeat the word of God. That's it. He has no other purpose. And he does not speak even a single word which is not coming from the scriptures, because as soon as he does that, it becomes imperfect. So a guru is simply a transparent via media of the message and mercy of Krishna. And if somehow or the other we are fortunate, because it is very difficult, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who is none other than Radha Krishna combined, the Yuga Avatar, he says, Brahmand Bhramite Kono Bhagyavan Jeev Guru Krishna Prasade Paye Bhakti Lata Beach, that only a very, very rare and fortunate person will come across Guru and Krishna, and with their mercy then gets the seed for devotional service, which is the ultimate occupation for every human being or every living entity. And Janame Janame Sabe Pita Mata Paaye Guru Krishna Nahi Mile. It is also mentioned that in every lifetime you will get, and in every species of life we get a set of parents, family, relatives, friends, everything. But we don't have the opportunity to get Guru and Krishna in every lifetime. And even after being born as a human being, it is very rare that a particular human being comes across a bona fide Guru, a very, very fortunate person. I've noticed one thing, that wherever the word Guru has been mentioned, a very fortunate, that word has been used in these scriptures. So once we come across, then all we need to do is surrender. And as soon as we come across a bona fide Guru, we should understand the end of our material existence is near. All our problems will be solved very, very soon. Every issue will be resolved. This is just the beginning of the end of all that we are going through, and end of our material existence as well. Guru is simply the manifestation of Krishna in our life. Therefore, he is given the same respect as God. Now, when the Lord sees our sincere desire, he immediately wants to show himself to us. But at this stage, we cannot see anything which is spiritual. We can only see matter, material forms. So the Lord sends his representative into our life, who then readies us, who can trains us up so that we become qualified to see the Lord when he is in front of us. So Guru engages the disciple in training. And through that training, the disciple's vision gets purified, heart gets purified, and he becomes fit to be able to see the Lord's spiritual form. So Guru is due the same respect as God. Yasya prasadat bhagavat prasado, yasya prasadan nagati kutopi. That if we please him, Krishna is pleased, and if we displease him, Krishna is displeased, because he is the direct representative of God. Is God only appearing in a form that we can see, touch and relate to, form made up of matter. But we should not think that the Guru is material or mundane. So this is the first step. And as soon as Arjuna surrenders to Krishna, one more important point here to know, that as long as Arjuna was giving his arguments and he was thinking, oh no, Krishna, this is right, I feel this is the perfect way to deal with the situation, or in my opinion this is to be done, Krishna did not speak a single word. Just sending a message across that if a person does not humble himself, if a person does not stop having faith in his own intelligence and ability, even God cannot teach him. So we have to be empty, and then only somebody can teach us. Even God cannot teach us. So only when Arjuna surrendered and said, now you teach me, then Krishna starts speaking. Immediately Krishna accepts the position of a guru. He smiles because a friend now has decided to become a disciple. And then the first thing, text number 11 to 30, Krishna just speaks about one point, the foundational knowledge, the ABCD of spiritual life. Because without understanding this particular concept which Krishna has explained in text number 11 through 30 of the second chapter, it is very difficult to understand the rest of the Gita. Just like it's very difficult to build a skyscraper without building the foundation, and foundation does take time. So in this whole chapter, which is 72 verses, 20 verses given for one single concept. It's the longest concept which is discussed in this. And the concept is simple. It's just like if somebody joins an organization, the first thing that is told to him is his identity. Okay, so you are the CFO, you are the CEO, you are the peon, you are the receptionist. So unless his identity is defined, how will the person know what to do? Everything else will just be in chaos. If I enter the organization, I'm not told what to do, and I just start doing random things, then I'll disturb others, I'll disturb myself also. So similarly, the first thing that Krishna does is through Arjuna, he speaks about the identity, his real identity, our real identity. Unless we understand our identity, we'll have doubts about every little teaching of the Gita, everything that we do. Why do I need to go to a temple? Why do I need to chant? Why do I need to worship God? Why do I need to hear from scriptures? Why do I need satsang? Because Krishna explains, we are spiritual by nature. We are not these bodies, we are material. We are not these material bodies, we are spiritual beings, we are spirit souls. This body is simply a covering. It is perishable and the soul is imperishable. So important thing, then Krishna speaks about how the body is going through six changes and death is the final change, then the soul enters into another body. He talks about the concept of reincarnation. Then a question may arise in Arjuna's mind, okay, you're saying body is just going through changes, death is also a final change, then what about the pain that I experience when somebody dies? That's for real. Krishna says that then tolerance. Not every problem in the world has a solution. Because this is a world, it is called Mrityu Loka. Anybody who is born is sure to die, and anybody who is dead is sure to be born again. So you have to tolerate, because we are just like in the middle of the ocean. What can you do if there are waves? Tolerate, because we are in the middle of the ocean. But if you want to be free from that fear of waves, move out of the ocean. As long as we are within the ocean, there will be waves and we'll be getting scared. So one concept, that we are not these bodies, we are spirit souls, we are spiritual beings. Kitni bar we have heard this sentence since the time we are born. Hum sharir nahi atma hai, hum sharir nahi atma hai, hum sharir nahi atma hai. But how many times have we ever deeply contemplated this concept? Hum sharir nahi atma hai. This word atma, I always say that this has been abused by especially the media industry. Whenever we say the word atma, something else comes to your mind. Atma, atma, atma. Some horror serials. But atma is our identity. The first thing that we need to establish, or we need to understand, that we are not these bodies, we are spiritual beings. And then everything else makes sense. Okay, we are spiritual beings. So body is like a vehicle, and the soul is the driver. Now if we take our car to the petrol station, we say gaadi ki dikki full kar do, and then we say driver ka bhi full kar do. That's absurd, illogical, because driver's food is different and car's food is different. So body is matter, body's food is different. Our food, we are spiritual beings, is different. That is why you see, even if the person has everything in life, all the facilities that are required to make this body comfortable and happy, still people are miserable because they are not feeding themselves. We are spiritual beings. It's not our happiness, satisfaction. These are not the emotions getting generated within the matter. Matter is dead. Body is always dead. They are the emotions within the soul. So the soul is hankering, and the food for the soul is spiritual. Chanting the names of God, remembering Him, hearing His message, hearing His glories, name, fame, qualities, pastimes, serving Him, worshipping Him, remembering Him, praying to Him. This is the food for us. We are spiritual. This is our natural environment. That's why we need to be connected to our natural environment always if we want to be happy. Just like the fish, the natural environment for the fish is water. If you take the fish out of the water and take it on a world tour, the fish is not happy. But as soon as the fish is back in its natural environment, it's very happy and satisfied. So the secret of satisfaction is, we have to start finding pleasure in those things which are of similar nature. We are spiritual, so start connecting spiritually, start finding happiness, pleasure in those things which are of similar nature, and then we are happy. As simple as that. Now we are spiritual, and this body is matter, and everything else around us is also matter. A spiritual being trying to find pleasure in matter, it is an incompatible situation. It is practically impossible. Even if there's little pleasure, that's flickering, because the nature of matter is, it has a beginning and it has an end. So this is one thing which Krishna speaks in these 20 verses. Understand your identity, because if you're not even clear who we are, how will we know what to do? And this is the basic problem in human society today. Nobody has realized this concept. Everybody is thinking they are these bodies and just to keep this body fit. Now, we should keep this body fit because it is a vehicle. And you can do your things, you can do your yoga, exercise, diet. But exclusive attention to the body and not caring for oneself, the real self, that is thoroughly condemned. Because even if you try hard, even if you try to keep your body fit as much as you want, still it is slipping away, it is getting old, it is going to die. So important thing is to invest on those things which are of permanent nature. The soul is permanent. Spiritual things are permanent. Matter is temporary. So we have to understand we are not these bodies, we are the spiritual beings. So if you want happiness in life, if you want satisfaction in life, we have to connect spiritually. We have to be connected to our natural environment, which is spiritual. We are not these bodies, we are spiritual beings. We are not these bodies, we are spiritual beings. Again and again Krishna makes this point. There was an old lady, she had a parrot. So she bought a cage made of pure gold for the parrot. But she was so fascinated by this cage that she kept on polishing the cage every day, very, very carefully, attentively. And one day she came and she saw the bird, the parrot inside the cage had died. Because in her fascination towards this cage, she forgot to feed the bird. Not realizing that it was a home for the bird. Without the bird, what is the use of buying a cage? So she got so fascinated that she forgot to feed the bird. That is what we are doing. And that's why there are large-scale anxiety, depression, everything. People having everything in life, also committing suicide, getting anxious and becoming depressed. This is the only missing link, that they are not realizing who they are. And this is foundational understanding. Foundational. If we can understand this one concept, then everything else will make sense. This is foundation. I am not the body, I am a spiritual being. Like there was a saying, I am not a spiritual, I am not a material being on a spiritual journey, I am a spiritual being on a material journey in this world. We are spiritual beings. The body is perishable no matter what you do, and the soul is imperishable. It cannot be killed at any cost. We are just passengers. And there is a nice story. Once a merchant, now in the earlier days they used to travel by ship, so somehow there was some storm and the ship was destroyed. This person was in the middle of the ocean trying to swim, and he sees an island, and he gets onto that island. Suddenly he sees a group of people running towards him, and they're shouting, "Long live the king, long live the king, long live the king." And he was thinking, who is the king? He's looking around, said, "You are our king." I said, "King? I was about to die, and these people are saying I'm the king." And they picked him up on a palanquin and placed him on the throne. So he became the king of that island. He was very happy living. Now I get to enjoy all my life. But somebody came and told him, you know, on this island, a person can be the king only for 5 years. And after that, these people only who have picked you up in a palanquin, brought you royally and put you on this royal throne, they will pick you up and throw you in a deserted island, which is infested with the most dangerous animals and where you will die a miserable death. It's dark, dingy, and very dangerous, very scary. And the king started thinking, this merchant, intelligent to tha, because he was a businessman. Said, what to do. So he called his minister one day, his chief minister, and he spoke something into his ear. And the minister immediately said, "Impossible." He said, "If it is impossible, I'll kill you. I'll get your head cut off because I'm the king at the moment." So he said, "Do it immediately. Just get going." Immediately the chief minister left. Now the 5 years are over, and these people come and they are shouting abuses at him now. They pick him up and they take him to that island where they had thrown many other kings also. But when they go to that island, they see it was no more a deserted island. There were beautiful palaces, rivers, ponds, and gardens filled with trees full of fruit and flowers. There were many other people living there, and they were surprised. It looked like a beautiful kingdom. So they were surprised. And the king just smiled at them, said, "All of you also please come along and live with me here." And they all lived happily ever after. Now in this world, everyone wants to live. And everyone wants to live happily. And then everyone wants to live happily ever after. But it is not possible. This is a world of matter. Anything which is matter has to have an end. This material body will have to end one day, will have to perish. We don't end though. So therefore, if we get a spiritual body, then we don't go through the experience of disease, old age, death. And that's what human life is meant for. We can definitely get that. So a human being should constantly be thinking, by my previous karma, I've got this body now. Now, which body am I going to get next? This should be our realization, but nobody's thinking about it. Everybody's investing, but nobody's thinking about afterlife, investing in afterlife. Other species of life, they don't have choice. After a lot of struggle, going through all different species of life, all varieties, one comes to a human life. And in human life, we are given the choice. Now you can decide where you want to go. And if you miss this opportunity to go to the higher realms and work towards the ultimate goal of life, God realization, and go to His abode, which Krishna advertises again and again in the Gita, then even if you're in the material world, the miseries of birth, old age, disease, death, they continue. And if you get degraded to lower species of life, then we have to really go through evolution. There we have no choices. Then we have to go through all species again, all varieties. Then somehow, after many lifetimes, one becomes a human being. So in this world, we cannot live happily ever after. But in the spiritual realm, it is possible. So we aspire for that realm. So what does the king represent in this story? The king represents the soul. The island represents the body. In which the 5 years represent the temporary lifespan which we are given. Temporary period. During which we rule over this island called body. And the all those people who are very happy when we come into this world, those same people will pick us up. And then they will take us to the crematorium also. Anyway, so what does the chief minister represent? Chief minister represents our senses. So what did the king do actually? The king, when he realized he had 5 years, so he called his minister and he told him, so in the next 5 years, turn that deserted island into a beautiful, beautiful kingdom. So when after his tenure in this island was over, he went, it was a beautiful kingdom. So what did the king do? He utilized whatever time he had at that moment at his disposal to invest in his future, to make sure that after he leave this world, which all of us must one day, but he prepared himself, he utilized whatever time he had in preparing for the future so that his future is also a bright one. And that is the special facility which is bestowed upon human beings. We can really, really choose our destination, choose the next body. And so therefore, when all of them went, it was already converted into a beautiful kingdom. So the chief minister represents the senses. We have 5 senses, the eyes, the tongue, the nose, the ear, and the skin. How can we use these senses to prepare for the future? Because senses like to run in different directions. Eyes want to see something beautiful, ears want to hear something nice. So what we do is, senses are the real cause of entanglement in this world, engaging in sense objects, eating things which are forbidden, seeing things which are forbidden. So how do we purify our senses? How do we prepare for the destination? It is said the eyes, the function of the eyes is to see. So we can use these eyes to regularly at our home, if we have deities, the murti of the Lord, maybe Lakshmi Narayan, Sita, Ram, Radha, Krishna. We can use our eyes to regularly take darshan of the beautiful form of the Lord. Even if you don't have the deity, you might have a picture of the Lord. That is also fine. Ears in hearing His katha regularly. Tongue in tasting the food which is offered to Him. Whatever you eat, offer it to Him. Put some tulsi and then you eat it. And then with the tongue, you can also vibrate the name of the Lord. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. So the function of the tongue is twofold, to taste and to vibrate. So you taste the prasad and to chant the holy names. And then the touch, the skin, you can be used in associating with the devotees of the Lord, sense of touch, and cleaning the temple of the Lord, touching those things which are offered to the Lord, because they are very, very purifying. And the nose, the function of the nose is to smell. So regularly you can offer some tulsi or flowers, or you can offer incense to the Lord. And when we smell these things, our sense of smell gets purified. So this way, if we can spend some time every day, then we are actually are wise like that, the king and we are using our minister, our senses, in preparing for the future. So when we leave this world, we'll not have to think where we are going. We'll know where we are going. We will be going to a beautiful, beautiful kingdom. And that is the abode of the Lord. And that is what the human beings can decide. And this is called intelligence. Think about where we are going after we leave this world, which we have to one day. Prepare for that place. We don't want to be degraded into lower species. We don't want to go to hell. We don't want to suffer. And if we don't want these things, then we have to start preparing now. Life is a preparation. Death is the examination. The last thoughts will decide where we go and which kind of body we get. Last thoughts will depend on how we have used our senses throughout our life. So it is as simple as that. We cannot pass the exam if you've not studied during the entire semester. Similarly, the final exam cannot be passed if you have not prepared well throughout our life. Therefore, spiritual life is a necessity. Connecting with Krishna is a necessity. How we can do that? We can remember this simple thing, A, B, C, D. A is association. Regularly associate with the devotees, hear from them. B is study the books. Study Bhagavatam, study the Gita, Ramayana, Mahabharata, scriptures. C, chant his holy names regularly. Even if it's like 15-20 minutes to start with. And D, diet. Whatever you eat, offer it to the Lord first and then you eat it. So this is called food for the soul, and we are the soul. This is called spiritual or food, or this is like connecting to our natural environment, which is spiritual. To the degree we stay in touch with our natural environment, to that very degree we'll remain happy and satisfied. So after laying down this foundation, now the second thing, what is done? Suppose a person, I give the example again, if a person joins an organization, first thing that is told to him is, you are so and so, this is your designation, you are the CEO, you are the CFO. And then second thing that is done is, the duties are defined. Now you have to do this one, this and that. So that's what Krishna does. So in text number 31 to 53, in the second chapter, Krishna talks about two types of duties we have. First, he says, we are this, and this is our duty. These are our duties. He talks about two types of dharma. Dharma does not mean Hindu dharma, Islam dharma. These are different types of faith. Dharma is defined as one's real position, one's original position. And just like the dharma of sugar is to be sweet, dharma of chili is to be hot, dharma of water is to be liquid. Similarly, dharma of every soul is to love God, to serve God. And every faith also agrees upon this one point. So in this world, Krishna defines there are two types of dharma that we need to perform. One is called Swadharma and one is called Sanatana Dharma. Swadharma means duty towards Swajan, our friends, family, society, like that. And Sanatana Dharma means duty towards God. And both should go hand in hand. People do the biggest mistake thinking, oh, Manav Seva is also Madhav Seva. We don't need to do it separately. That's a sign of envy when people want to serve humanity, but they don't want to serve God. Oh, no, this is fine. We don't need to serve God. Just serving people is also equal to serving God. That's a sign of subtle envy, which is very deep-rooted. When people are not willing to serve God, do anything for Him, that's because of the deep-rooted envy in their heart. That's why they don't want Him in their life. So both should go hand in hand. So dharma, duty towards friends, family, society. Sanatana dharma, duty towards God. And then Krishna also explains what are the benefits of performing both the duties properly. He says when you perform your duties towards friends, family, society properly, maximum you will go to heavens, and the resultant birth could be a better one, more peaceful. You live a peaceful life also, and that is also not guaranteed. Even if you do your dharma properly to your friends, family and society, still you may not get what you are expecting. So he said at max one may go to heavenly planets, or in this world you may get some peaceful life or some riches, wealth, that's it. Even if you go to the heavens, you have to fall down after the results of the pious credits get over, because punya can maximum take us to heavens, but it cannot give us liberation. We'll again be stuck in this material world. Birth, old age, disease, death, miseries will continue. And we don't want these miseries, we want to be happy. And as long as we're in the realm of the material world, it is impossible. Then Krishna explains the benefits of following Sanatan Dharma. That means service to Him. Many times people ask, what will I get if I start serving God? And Krishna spends a lot of time. Text number 39 to 53, He speaks about it. And the first and the foremost benefit that Krishna speaks about is, He says, a person who starts following his Sanatan Dharma, that means do it for the Lord's pleasure, whatever you're doing. That means performing activities which are for the pleasure of the Lord, hearing, chanting, remembering, worshipping, praying to, or using our money, our resources in His service. That's called Sanatan Dharma. So what is the first benefit that one receives? One becomes free from bondage of karma. Now karma is the root cause of all the suffering that we go through in life. Whatever little or big problem, karma is the root cause. First thing that Krishna establishes is, because even if you do your duty towards friends, family, society perfectly, you're still bound. Because even piety causes bondage in the material world. Idhar hi chakkar lagwate rehti hai. It is not liberating. But Sanatan Dharma, service to God, service to Krishna, first thing that Krishna establishes is that one becomes free from bondage of karma. And then karma is gone, so you'll be happy. Because the cause of distress is karma, and that is destroyed. When you start serving Krishna, that burden is lifted off our head, automatically become happy. And then one might start thinking, okay, oh, karma, because it is mentioned that it is very, very difficult to get rid of karma. And it's not so easy. So one might start thinking, oh, Krishna is saying that if somebody starts serving Him, one becomes free from that karmic reaction. Then I might have to do a lot. Krishna speaks the 40th verse of second chapter. He says, Neha bikrama nashavasti pratyavayo na vidyate swa alpam api asya dharmasya trayate mahatobhay. He said, no. On this path, in this endeavor, there is no loss or diminution. The results of our pious activities, the results of swadharma, they diminish with time, the more we enjoy. But he says, in this path, in service to Krishna, there is no loss or diminution. Whatever we do on this path becomes our permanent asset. Nobody can take it away from us. And it is carried forward to the next life as well. And then he says, Swa alpam api asya dharmasya trayate mahato bhayat. And even if you do little on this path, it will save you from the greatest fears in life. So you don't have to do much. And whatever you do, it is permanent. And further he says how when somebody starts walking on this path, one becomes very determined. One develops the quality of determination. And determination is something which is there in every human being, what we have forgotten. But just by connecting with Krishna, because determination is very much required if we want to be successful in anything that we do in this world. So one develops the quality of determination. And hence Krishna says that he is capable of giving everything that we want. And he gives the example of a big reservoir of water compared to a well. Now, how much water can the well give to us? And how much water is there in the reservoir, big reservoir of water? So Krishna says, therefore, stop running to 10 different places, 10 different people. Come to me. I'm like that big reservoir of water. And that means you don't have to keep running around to get your desires fulfilled. We are so much worried about our desires. He says, because the Vedas talk about If you want this desire to be fulfilled, worship this devta. If you want this, worship this devta. There are 33 crore devtas. You keep worshipping each and every one. You want a good husband, wife, children, heavenly planets, freedom from disease. So for how long you will keep running from one person to the other? Krishna says, the next benefit that you receive by serving him, you don't have to run to 10 different places. In one person can fulfill all your desires. That's why Bhagavatam says, akamah sarva kamo va moksha kama udharati tivrena bhakti yogena yajeta purusha param. That even if somebody has material desires or spiritual desires or desires for liberation, one should simply approach Krishna and he will do the thorough job. He's extremely perfect in doing whatever he does. So another benefit that we receive by serving God is that we don't have to worry, kahan jayein, kya karein, kaise karein. Just approach Krishna. He will do it. Because even others, the devatas also, they cannot give us any benediction without his sanction. Ultimately, he is the sanctioning authority. So he says, therefore, learn to work for his pleasure. And life is not just about working for one's own pleasure. People think by acquiring things for ourselves, acquisitions, achievements, keeping everything for ourselves, we become happy. But Krishna says, karmanyava adhikaraste na ma phaleshu kadachana. Ma karma phala heturbhur ma te sangvastva akarmani. That you just do your duty and don't be attached to the results. Now there are two very deep points here why Krishna speaks this verse. Number one, it's not that Krishna is saying you give the results to me and I will keep enjoying. He's not that kind of boss. There are two things why he's telling us to be detached and why he's telling us to serve him without any attachment to the result. Because whenever we work in this world, the results depend on our past guna and karma. So Krishna is saying work. That is the only thing within your control. Don't be attached to the results. Because the results, if they don't come our way, and they are not according to our expectation, and if we are attached, then we feel a lot of pain also. So therefore, he says, you have the right, you are entitled to do your duty, but don't be attached to the results. Because there will be pain otherwise. Because they will come according to past guna and karma. This is external understanding. But internally, Krishna is indicating, because he's talking about Sanatana Dharma, the real Dharma of the soul. Because Swadharma is permanent. In every lifetime, our family members keep changing. Society keeps changing. And friends keep changing. But Sanatana Dharma, God is permanent. That is more important. And Krishna is saying, you just work without being attached to the results, indicating that you should work only for his pleasure, because that is how we have been created. By default, we have been made in such a way. By default, we are expected to be selfless servants of God. And because that will make us happy. That is our natural dharma. That is our real environment, true position. And only when we are situated in that position where we are selflessly serving him, we get unlimited happiness. Because selfless service pleases him. And in return, he gives us unlimited happiness. So this is the secret of happiness. Secret of happiness is not in acquisitions. It is about how we are pleasing the Lord. That much happiness we get in return. Or actually multiplied by millions. Krishna is very, very generous. And further, he says that once a person starts engaging in his service, he becomes free from the results of both good and bad karma. Now, even good karma causes bondage, as we discussed here. Maximum heavens again brings us back to the cycle of birth and death. And of course, bad karma to causes bondage. But somebody who engages in devotional service to him, does his sudharma, sanatana dharma properly, then he becomes free from the effects of both. That means, essentially, he's saying is one becomes liberated. And most importantly, while working for the Lord's interest, doing one's Sanatana Dharma properly, one attains divine consciousness. Now, divine consciousness is very, very important. It is explained that life is a preparation, death is the examination. And later on, I think in 8th chapter, Krishna explains how our last thoughts will decide our next body and destination. Only as humans, we are given that choice. Otherwise, if we get into other species of life, we just have to live our karma. We cannot rectify our karma. We have to go through evolution then. So divine consciousness one develops. Why Krishna is emphasizing that ultimately when you start serving him, start doing your Sanatana Dharma, ultimately you will develop a divine consciousness. Because according to the consciousness, the next body is given. When the person dies, his gross body is left behind, but the consciousness goes with the soul. And depending on the consciousness, the next destination is given, the next body is given. So it's very, very important to have a divine consciousness. Because without having the divine consciousness, the destination and body could be a degraded one. But if we have a divine consciousness, then we develop a divine body, a spiritual body. And that is considered the success of life. Ante Narayana Smriti. People have different definitions of success, but ultimate success of life is considered Ante Narayana Smriti, if we can remember the Lord at the last moment. So Arjuna hears this. Alright, so a person develops a divine consciousness. But what are the symptoms of such a person? If that person is moving around in this world, how do we recognize such a person that he's developed divine consciousness? Because he'll not go around posting it on social media or making a propaganda, "Finally I've achieved divine consciousness." This is a question. How does he walk? How does he sit? How does he respond? And in response to that question, Krishna starts answering in text number 54, and till the last verse of the second chapter, he is answering this question only. And basically he focuses on 3-4 aspects of a person, how we can recognize him, whether he has truly attained divine consciousness. Number one, he says, you can understand by his selfless efforts in serving the Lord. He loses all desire for personal sense gratification, and each of his desire is directed towards the pleasure of the Lord. And he still enjoys in this world, but till now he was enjoying with his mundane, blunt material senses. Now he starts enjoying through spiritual senses. Now enjoyment is not forbidden, please understand, but when we start enjoying through spiritual senses, that's when we really start enjoying. So number one symptom of such a soul who has attained divine consciousness, all his efforts are directed towards the pleasure of the Lord, nothing for himself. In every thought, word and action, he's thinking about what will please the Lord. Whether you're living as a family man or a sadhu, the thought process is same. And then Krishna says that person becomes free from dualities. He's not affected by pain, pleasure, honor, dishonor, praise, criticism, profit, loss, happiness, distress. In all these circumstances, he's equipoised. He's not affected. He remains equipoised. This is the second symptom. This is how we can understand a person is not affected. He is the same person, no matter what happens. And then he has his senses completely under control. He knows when to engage them. He knows when to withdraw them. He can engage his senses at will. At this stage, we really have to force ourselves to keep our senses under control. But for a person who has attained divine consciousness, it's not an effort at all. No endeavor. It is so spontaneous. And Krishna gives the analogy example of a tortoise, that a tortoise can withdraw its limbs when it senses the danger, and it can also bring out the limbs. So a self-realized person becomes like that. He can engage his senses at will, senses completely under control, because senses are the root cause of entanglement. But when somebody learns to control his senses, then he's free from entanglement. A person who has developed a divine consciousness, in essence, Krishna is saying, sir, by serving him, one learns to control his senses automatically. One becomes free from the effects of dualities. One will not be affected by the dualities of life. One will be equipoised and remain happy. One will become very selfless by serving him. And then Krishna spends some time describing the dangers of not controlling the senses, how the senses can actually lead to a person's fall down. The person can fall down so much, to such an extent, that it may be just millions and trillions of life before he really comes back to his senses. and by that time he must have completely degraded himself. And while speaking about a sense control, Krishna speaks about a very special verse, which is one of my favorite verses also, in which he gives the secret of happiness. And he tells Arjuna, because we have discussed that how spiritual life is a life of connection, it is not a life of rejection. You don't have to reject anything from your life, you just have to connect with the Lord through His name, His qualities, His pastimes, His devotees, His prasad, His books, like that, by praying, by remembering. Connection just had to add this dimension to one's life. So what do you gain from that connection? In this verse, Krishna answers, I think 65, where he says that without that divine connection, like many times people ask, what will I give? They may not ask, but they have it in their mind. What will I gain if I connect with the Lord, if I connect with Krishna? Krishna has answered this in one beautiful verse. He says, without that connection, there is no question of having a steady mind and intelligence. So those people who are struggling with their unsteady mind and unsteady intelligence, you can listen to this, that simply by connecting with Krishna, you will develop a steady mind and intelligence. Krishna says, if somebody does not have a connection, then one does not have a steady mind and intelligence. And if there is no steady mind and intelligence, one cannot have peace. And if there is no peace, where is the question of happiness? So ultimately, what will your connection do? Connection to Krishna, it will bring you to the stage of happiness. It will lead you to happiness. It will give you happiness. And that is what we are looking for. No matter what we do in this world, the practical purpose, the goal of all our activities remains happiness. We want to be an actor, we want to earn money, we want to raise our family. Whatever we do, ultimately the activity is not the goal. The goal is happiness. And Krishna is giving the formula here, how to achieve that happiness. He's not saying, you should have this much of bank balance, you should have this much power, influence, name, fame. He's saying that connection. If you have that connection, you have steady mind and intelligence. If you have that, you have peace. And if you have peace, you will have happiness. So that connection will give us the ultimate happiness that we are looking for. Further, Krishna continues to explain the symptoms of the self-realized person. And he says, what is night for the self-realized is the time of awakening for those who are materialistic, and vice versa. So when these people who are really serious about self-realization, they get up early in the morning, Brahma Muhurat, and they start focusing their attention on the Lord. But others go to sleep at that time. So this goes to show how serious people are about self-realization or divine consciousness. And then he ends this chapter by giving another analogy on describing the consciousness of a self-realized soul or somebody who has attained divine consciousness. He says, desires enter his heart like the rivers entering the ocean. But just like the ocean is unagitated, it is not disturbed at all. You see, all the rivers ultimately end up in the ocean, but you never see the ocean crossing its limits or getting flooded. Ocean remains still. Why? Because of its depth. He says, a person who attains divine consciousness becomes like that. Thousands and thousands of thoughts might enter his mind and desires enter his heart, but he's not affected. Our situation is, some desires, some thoughts, we get depressed, we get distracted. But he says, that person remains still. Now, important point to learn here is that it's not that the desires will stop, thoughts will stop. What happens is, even at the stage of self-realization, thoughts will come, desires will come. But at that stage, one is not affected by them. Now, at this stage, we are affected. So the desires are here at this stage also, desires will be there at that stage also. But the difference is, there, a person is easily able to say no. Like I was once hearing Radhanath Maharaj's lecture, my spiritual master, he said the difference between a self-realized person and a neophyte is the power to say no to unwanted thoughts and unwanted desires. At that stage, it becomes spontaneous, natural. One is not even disturbed. This stage, we have to really force ourselves. And a person living in this way, Krishna says in the last verse of the second chapter, and if a person lives this way and all these symptoms can be achieved, this divine consciousness can be achieved, how? Krishna has already explained, by serving him. And if somebody lives this way, then even at the time of death, one will be able to remember him and thus enter the kingdom of God, which is considered the perfection. That's when we'll understand that the person has achieved the perfection of human life. He has ended his cycle of karma, cycle of birth and death, and now he will live happily ever after. So basically, you can summarize this whole chapter in four themes. Text number 1 to 10, he's talking about the concept of guru, where Arjuna surrenders. And then 11 to 30, he speaks about the identity, how the soul is permanent, body is temporary. And then he talks about the two dharmas, text number 31 to 53. So dharma and Sanatana Dharma and their benefits. And then 54 to 72, he talks about the symptoms of somebody who has followed his Sanatana Dharma or who is serving God, the kind of benefits that he receives or the kind of symptoms that he develops. How he becomes immune to the dualities, he has senses under control, becomes selfless, and is not affected by any changes of this world, is unaffected by the desires. And he is the only person who becomes happy because he is connected with the divine, and that is the only secret of happiness. So we can remember the acronym for this chapter, Gita. G is for Guru, text number 1 to 10. 11 to 30 is identity. Then 31 to 53, the two dharmas. And then 54 to 72, A, Atma Ram, that means self-realized person or self-satisfied person, his symptoms. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.